The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Noty note, 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 noty note, note, notes, noty note, notes from the underground.
All right, folks, welcome back to Notes from the Underground. This is a podcast where we take a microscope to some of Christianity's thornier topics and people. I'm your host, Tiziana Mom So Hard Severse.
How you momming so hard today?
You know, I'm not. I'm not.
You're speechless.
I usually have something, you know, witty, some little quip, but I don't today because I, you know what? Because they upped my drugs.
I'm mama so hard they upped my drugs.
Yeah. So with postpartum with the second one, I had a little bit of the bumps in the roads. And so they put me on some Wellbutrin.
Did that.
And so they upped my dosage and I am.
No shame in your game.
Yeah.
Sister.
I feel so much better. Oh my goodness. Like, actually, like, I feel so much better that after the first couple of weeks on the Wellbutrin, I was able to look at my husband and say, this last year has been so hard for you. I'm so...
You could see him out of
your fog. I could see him out, and I could see that he was also struggling and that this was hard on him too. You know what I mean? Even though it wasn't his body that was suffering, he saw me suffering, and that was his own kind of suffering, right? So yeah, so they upped my dosage today to like what is the standard medical dose for most people because I wanted to just dip my toes in the pool of chemical support. Didn't want to really like dive in.
And you don't have to stay on it forever.
No, that's what my mom said. She was like, you know,
I
it's
came off
5 years.
I've been off of it for for decades.
Yep. Now. Yep. Well, it's just
16 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So that's it. So my mom said too. So yeah. So I am, I'm so chill. I don't have a quitty retort.
Gotcha.
Perhaps Ella does. We've got three folks with us here today. We've got Ella the Edge Edgerton. The
junior.
Second. The junior. Yeah. And Sarita, the Edge Edgerton, the first.
Hey, y'all.
Yeah. And then over here to my right, I've got Lakeisha Lee.
Hi.
And we are having a discussion today on Proverbs 31. If you missed the last episode, you know, you might want to go back and give it a listen because you might be lost on a couple of things.
We solved the world's problems in that one.
We absolutely did. Yeah. So you might want to take notes,
too. We solved the patriarchy.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely solve the problems of patriarchy. So
I do have to say that in my world, when you say patriarchy, it's a different thing. Like, I don't know. It's not that it's a good thing. It's just I kind of view it differently. So sort of that trad wife. You know, the trad wife is becoming the thing. Have you heard that? The trad wife. That's a social media thing. Trad wife.
What now?
You don't know that?
No.
Oh, okay.
Edumacatus, what?
Trad wife, being a traditional wife.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, yeah, see, so...
That's becoming more popular.
Yeah, and my concept, like when I talk about patriarchy, I mean, I'm talking about the systems and structures that cement people into spaces where they have like little agency and little respect and like little gratitude, right? So like, there's nothing wrong with being a stay-at-home wife, but under patriarchy, that role is all you're allowed to do because you're not good for anything else, you're not welcome to do anything else, and you have no power to do anything else. So that, and in patriarchy, under that, to me, under that system as well, men are, you know, you are the worker bee, and if you want to be at home with your kids, if you want to take a sick day because one of your kids is out of school, like, that makes you less of a man. And so for me, it's a social structure wherein everybody's freedom is inhibited or not.
And that was the thing until COVID. And now you can just call in sick for anything.
Yeah.
I got that COVID.
Yeah.
I was exposed to COVID. So yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then they're like, go home.
It used to be.
It used to be diarrhea.
Don't come in.
Yeah. Vomiting.
You come in unless you're bleeding from an orifice.
Yeah.
You have
no diarrhea always.
Now even
work.
With COVID,
oh,
they're like,
did
put
it?
On
I
a
never
mask
even
and come
try.
On. Yeah, right, right.
Like, that's not
yeah.
even an excuse anymore with COVID. They're like, put on a mask. Come on.
Yeah, that had my friend Andrea works in the
South
public
Carolina
school.
And there's no mask.
Different ball of wax. Yeah, different ball of wax down there. Yeah, yeah. Andrea, my friend Andrea, was like, she was still actively testing positive, and she's a speech language pathologist that works with like middle school students. And they were like, got a mask? Come in.
Mm-hmm. How in the world can they see her mouth if she's doing speech therapy?
You know what? This was her concern. This was at the top of the list of her concerns.
But yeah, so I'm not an expert on speech.
I think it's important to clarify that, though. I'm glad you brought that up, Sarita, because patriarchy means different things to different people, and
it's almost always used in a, especially from my side of the aisle, mm-hmm. as an argument. That has a lot of negativity, a lot of feminism, a lot of mm-hmm. feminazi, mm-hmm. like women power, men suck. Women power,
right. Yes,
and I never
yes,
want to be accused
yes.
of that because yeah. I believe that God created men mm-hmm. and they have their roles mm-hmm. and their callings mm-hmm. and God created women mm-hmm. and they have their roles and their calling. And then he made us parents, some of us, mm-hmm. and we have a calling together. Yeah. Whether we're divorced or married mm-hmm. or single,
however you're doing
it. Never
got
married.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, but you have that role that once you bring a life into the world, you got to quit being selfish.
Yeah.
Quit it.
Yeah.
And the Proverbs 31 that we're going to discuss today, uh-huh. she is really the epitome of a non-selfish person.
And no matter what she's doing, right? And again,
it doesn't matter what she's doing.
Yeah,
from day to
that's
day,
what we're talking ask. About. What's so fascinating is mm-hmm. because it really is about an attitude and a posture that women uniquely bring to whatever their task is. And it's about the attitude and the posture that men should have regarding the women in their lives. And so I'm glad we had a chance to clarify that because I love men. I love my brothers. I love my dad and I love my husband, right? Mm-hmm. And I love the work that he does. You know, he listens to Jordan Peterson a lot. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I love JP.
So does my husband, girl. So he loves him, but he's
got to go to re-education camp.
I don't know. I don't know what
yes,
that is.
He does. If he wants to practice psychology in Canada, he has to go and be re-educated.
Who, Dylan?
No.
What?
He's not from Canada.
Oh, I thought he was Canadian.
Jordan Peterson?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He is Canadian.
Uh-huh. If he wants to practice psychology in Canada.
Oh, got you. Okay. That's it. Okay. Sorry. I thought you were telling me that if my husband wants to be a psychologist, he has to go to re-education. I was like, girl, he's an electrician. he ain't doing none of that.
He is not even remotely
interested in that, right? But one of the things that he talks about and that has been helpful for me, and he was just like, you know, you can't like, you know, in a society that like undervalues men or like, again, we get into this war where there's only one space at the top and either women can be there or men can be there instead of making space for what everybody does and brings to the table and creating a sense of gratitude and love, right? For me, when I talk about taking down patriarchy, I'm talking about that, the system that says only one can be at the top. And I have a women, gender, and sexuality studies minor, and I found myself in opposition to a lot of especially first wave feminism from my own standpoint because of the way that it devalued all these, again, because it also said only the white woman's voice matters. And that took away all these other different identities and all these and men. And one of the things Dylan was saying, he was like, you know, if you live in a society that takes away all the men, who's going to build your roads? Who's going to plumb your toilets? Mm-hmm. I don't know a single
who's
woman
plumber.
Who's
going to impregnate your womb?
Well, that last one maybe, but those other two skills, literally anybody can do that.
Literally anyone can do them, but literally nobody
really
does, right? Like not very many people do.
You don't see
do.
Very many women doing it.
Like Dylan's an electrician. He works on construction. He works around all different kinds of crews, but doing both remodels and rebuilds. He's worked in industrial electric, commercial electric, and residential electric. He has a female apprentice and he loves it because he loves women. But in all of his time and career working in all these different states and all these different like environments, there's been one female electrician. So what he's saying is like you're saying, Sarita, that there's a certain hormones are real and testosterone and estrogen are fundamentally different hormones. Now, we both have both of them in our systems, but if a body has a preponderance of one versus a preponderance of the other, they're gonna behave in ways that are reflective of that hormone. And so when you are a man and you've been born with all this testosterone in the system, you tend to be attracted to certain kinds of things, certain activities, certain whatevers, and you're more likely, I know several boys, several men, that loved to sit on the front stoop and watch the garbage collectors collect their garbage. I don't know one woman that did that, right? I don't know a single female that did that, not a single one. So again, like, so when I talk about patriarchy, I'm never talking about devaluing men, and I'm never talking about elevating the voice of women above men. What I'm talking about is recognizing that there's space at the top for everybody, and that everybody's role and part deserves to be acknowledged and honored and given space. So I'm glad you brought that up.
All right, so let's look at this.
But let's look at this
virtuous woman.
Let's start from the top. So we're talking about a virtuous woman.
Or at least that's how most translations.
Most of the time, we've a virtuous woman. I actually have a whole list of different translations and the ways that they translate that particular word. And they're not all the same.
Mine says, well, I had made a note in here that says valor and bravery.
Valor and bravery, right? See, that's the thing. So for the most part, we get words like a New Century Version, so a good wife, New American Standard, an excellent wife. Common English Bible, a competent wife. Good News Translation, a capable wife. New Living Translation, a virtuous and capable wife. New International Version, a wife of noble character. Virtuous Woman, King James. Worthy Woman, American Standard. Valiant Woman. In the Douay Rheims, American Edition. And a capable, intelligent, and virtuous woman in the Amplified. Virtue is an interesting word because it comes from the Latin for like a man who is of valor. And so when the word that we're going to discuss was originally translated, that's why virtue was the word that was used there. But the Victorian era sort of co-opted that word and turned it into something else. And so I think when we talk about a woman, a virtuous woman, what comes up to mind is like chastity and demureness in terms of like virtue, right? But the actual word in the actual Hebrew is eshet chayil. And
bless you.
Yeah, eshet chayil. And it's actually a woman of valor. Or Bruce Waltke is another theologian that I read, woman of power. And it has you see this word a couple of different times. It's how Ruth was described. And it has a masculine counterpart in Psalm 116. Where it's the man of valor. And so when we start talking about woman of virtue, what they actually are meaning is a woman of valor. So in terms of Hebrew literature, that particular translation and that word valor actually places this poem more in line with the tradition of the Jewish heroic poetry than it does anything else. And there are other examples of this particular, like, so in...
I think of Joan of Arc when you're talking about, like, she was...
Yeah.
A warrior.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote some poetry. She knew her scripture.
Yeah.
I mean...
And that's what this is meant to convey. So from the beginning, it's saying a woman of valor, who can find her? And that word valor, and then he goes on to describe this woman. And if you go read it's Psalm 112. It's the same sort of structure to describe how people of God behave. And of course, if less a woman is being specifically mentioned, whenever they talk about people, they're really talking about men in most ancient writings. But like, so it's really, that's like the counterpart and all that, how he's capable and he's compassionate and he provides food for his people, right? Like it's all the same. I'm going to read this because this is a genre of Hebrew poetry that is characterized by recounting a hero's mighty deeds, usually his military exploits. And another strong example of this type of poetry can be found in the Song of Deborah in Judges 5 and in 1 Samuel 18:6-8, when the women of Israel sing about the militaristic prowess of Saul and David. So that's the one where they're saying, remember the women come out after they're coming home from battle and say, Saul slayed his thousands and David his tens of thousands, and Saul gets all jelly. That is an example of heroic poetry, and the Song of Deborah. That's an example of heroic poetry. So before you can even begin reading and before you can even begin evaluating what God's trying to tell us, you got to first wrap your mind around the fact that what he's not talking about is a chaste woman or like a quiet or demure woman. He's talking about a woman of valor. He's talking about a warrior.
A warrior.
A fierce woman.
A fierce and powerful woman. So the militaristic implications don't end with just that word. As the poem goes on, again, it is a recounting of a hero's mighty deeds. So in verse 11, it says her husband places his full trust in her and he lacks nothing of value. The literal translation there is like booty or spoils of war. 15, she provides food for her family, literally prey, like a hunter. She girds herself with strength, literally girds her loins, just like people do in battle. And in 27, she watches over the affairs of her household, literally spies. Another interesting thing about her household, and she provides food for her household, it was very uncommon in ancient literature, especially ancient Hebrew literature, to not say her father's house or her husband's house. So that's another piece of this particular puzzle that's fascinating. It's her house and her people, which is interesting. So according to Erica Moore, who's another theologian, the valorous wife is a heroic figure. I'm going to read several quotes because it's important, I think, that I recognize and say out loud, this was not my thought. I did not do the study to come up with this because I don't speak Hebrew, but other people do. So Erica Moore says, the valorous wife is a heroic figure used by God to do good for his people, just as the ancient judges and kings did good for God's people by their martial exploits. Which led me to take a look at some other scriptures because I've heard other things about this as well. So Sarita, you mentioned this in the last podcast. And again, listen, you can't hang with us if you haven't listened to the first one. Like, you're probably lost already. So just go listen, just put a pin in this, go listen to the first one. But when you'd said it's men are, God made Adam from dust and he made woman from bone. So in Genesis 2:18, God says that man should not be alone. So he makes a helpmate for him. Right? So that word helpmate or helper, ezer, comes from the root word azar, to surround, to protect, or to aid, which is the same word as Exodus 18:4, the God of my father was my help, my azur, and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. Deuteronomy 33:7, and this he said of Judah, O Lord, give heed to Judah and bring him to his people, strengthen his hands for him and be a help as there against his adversaries. Deuteronomy 33:26, Ezekiel 12:14, 23:32-21. Like, there's all these different places where this particular word is used to describe like this, the support, the invaluable life-saving support that God provides his people. And so that is more in line with this poem is in my mind is designed to highlight and bring back to our mind the original design that man is in charge, which there's no dispute about that men are in charge, but that women are this invaluable helpmate that he cannot do this work without. Just like Israel can't do their work without God rescuing them. It's about the balance that was meant to be created in that particular design, how we are meant to support and lift up one another and work together. Not as it's often, again, been misused as in a subordinate fashion rather than a perfectly paired partnership. You know, one of the examples that I read and that I really liked is like think about a leader and then like the general of the army. There's not necessarily a power differential. They have different roles and different jobs. The king's job is to rule and to lead. The general's job is to be on the front lines, manning the perimeter and keeping it safe, right? One is not more important than the other. They have a different role and they have to work together if they're gonna survive. And so that, when I think about that concept undergirding this like super old Hebrew poem that's not been influenced by Hellenistic thinking and the Greek cultural concept of women being trash. When I was doing my research for the last previous podcast, I literally read an ancient Greek scholar who thought that women should just be kept chained in the basement and used for procreative purposes only. Their thought process and their conceptualization of the role and value of women was so incredibly low that I think that is what has influenced and that is what has shifted what God's intended design and how God wanted people to view women from being.
And it entirely shapes Ephesians 5.
Ephesians 5.
Which husbands, one? Love your wives, and women, respect your husbands, submissive, being submissive.
Do you want to know something? I read a book. I'm so glad you brought that up. I read a book. And the book was called?
Ephesians?
No.
Oh, okay.
I did. I did read that one too. No, I read a book called How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking About It. And it was, you know, reductive in some ways, right? Not everybody thinks or acts the same way just because not all men are exactly the same. Not all women are exactly the same, right? Listen, but they talk about how we operate and how we work in terms of communication differently because we have different, our systems are built differently. So it was talking about how men have a system built for hyperarousal because of that testosterone. They are meant to spring into action at any point in time. You think about it, a woman can essentially get pregnant maybe 2 or 3 days out of the month. So his body has to be ready to go when she says it's time to go. He has to be ready to fight. He has to be ready to hunt. Hunting is all about being perfectly still until it's time to attack. So men have this system built for hyperarousal. It's part of how they work. Now, women were hunter-gatherers. Or in the hunter-gatherer kind of concept, women are the ones that stay at home, tend the fires, make the food, do all the stuff, right? So women have a different system. Their brains and their bodies have a different system. They work differently. And so when men, the system of hyperarousal, shame and the cortisol and adrenaline that are associated with that shut down their system of hyperarousal because they have to kind of like recover the cortisol and they don't have the ability to spring into action. So they feel really unsafe when they've been verbally shamed by their partners. And they took these like electrodes and hooked up to men's brains. And you are suddenly allowed to input, should you so desire. But we put electrodes up to men's brains and they had a woman like basically verbally shame and humiliate her partner. And it was the same reaction as women's electrodes hung up to their brain when their partner went to strike them. Now, women have a different, now the book wasn't just about how women can be better to their men. It was also about how men can be better to their women. And it was about looking at women's brains and the way women's bodies work based on their experience in tribe and how, but that's not what we're talking about right now. And so in Ephesians, when it's like women, you know, respect your husbands, it's like God knew their systems were created in a certain way to operate at maximum efficiency in a certain way. And women, don't you know how powerful you are? Your respect, your kind words, your uplifting faith and belief in him is actually like the launching point that he can lift off from.
Yeah. I think about that when you say that, because you know the saying, a man can make a house, but a woman can make a home, mm-hmm. right? So if a man is to provide the shelter and things, but mm-hmm. the woman is to provide the safe place mm-hmm. for the man to be in. So like all of it is kind of related to that when you think about it, like our roles. And when you think about like having the man be the man in the essence of him, whatever that looks like for him, mm-hmm. but, you know, building this home, building this house, but then the woman coming in, mm-hmm. being who she is, mm-hmm. and like thinking about how you feed each other and what you say to each other and how you nurture each other and yeah. pour into each other, like what's needed, how it's different,
yeah,
but it's the same mm-hmm. in essence, mm-hmm. you know? So that just kind of made me think of that.
Yeah, and then that's the thing, like if everybody's holding up their end of the seesaw, then, you know, everybody has balance. But like that's to me, when I was reading all of this stuff and I'm putting all this together, this picture of this valorous woman who has the power of a warrior, when you are when you have a partner that's a woman and she's a warrior and she's strong and she's powerful and she believes in you. Mm-hmm. When you're a mom and you have a son, and you are strong and you are powerful and you are capable, and he knows that you believe in him. You don't question his judgment. You don't question the way he made the eggs. You don't question whether or not he could stop at the grocery store and get the things. You treat him like he is the competent partner worthy of you as a woman of valor. That changes everything. And when I read that book, How to Improve Your Marriage Without Talking About It, it was not a Christian book. It was a secular book. It was written by a psychologist who did brain studies on people, right? But when I saw that it lined up with scripture, I felt an enormous amount of sorrow and grief for the ways that I participated in ruining my first marriage by being a woman who created enormous amounts of shame, you know? Because I did. But the piece that I missed, the God piece that I missed, is that my created design as the helpmate, i.e. general of the army that protects the perimeter from attack, I didn't realize that I had fallen down on that job and let the negativity in. And it makes me feel very differently about my, like, I'm using air quotes, folks, my role as the stay-at-home mom. And that's what we're going to, as we start reading more, you know, about this, that's really what that did for me and how it gave me a sense of empowerment and belonging as a stay-at-home mom. You look like you got something you want to say, Sarita.
Well, I was just kind of looking at the different things here. And first of all, she's trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He trusts her.
Mm-hmm.
If your man can't trust you because you have shamed him or told stories behind his back or mm-hmm. post everything on social media or whatever it is, or you just ignore him when he tries to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're man.
You're not trustworthy.
I get in trouble for that all the time because I have ADHD. So it's really hard for me to focus sometimes.
And you have to work at it.
And I have to work at it,
and
yeah.
And she's good to him. Mm-hmm. She loves him. She doesn't do him evil all the days of her life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, you know, she's a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Then she goes to seek wool and flax. But before it gets into, like, what she does, mm-hmm. because it says a couple of things about who she is. Then it goes into what she does,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes back into a little bit about who she is again. She's full of strength and honor. She speaks wisely, and she speaks kindly.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not lazy.
Mm-hmm.
She fears the Lord.
Yeah.
She may not be the best looking thing in the world.
Well, and
especially as you get older.
Let me tell you something right now. This particular poem is actually a polemic against that idea
exactly.
that a woman's worth is in her beauty. And what's interesting is, man, ooh, there is nothing like this in any other ancient Near East cultures that we study. And we have lots of different writings. We have the Instructions of Amenhotep, like I mentioned earlier. We've got the Code of Hammurabi. We've got, like, you know, the Egyptian Instruction to the Dead. We have lots of writings about other ancient Near East cultures that were active at this particular time. And again, we don't know exactly how old this particular poem is because we don't even know who King Lemuel is anymore. This is the only poem that says, you guys, stop looking at her outward appearance. A woman's worth is not in her beauty. A woman's worth is in her trustworthiness, in her capabilities, in her power.
Well, I want you to also, it talks about the way she speaks. And Ella had looked up some, and James is the commentary on the tongue, right? And you had looked up some verses, right, that had all to do with the way. Just think about the way you speak to another woman.
Mm-hmm.
But we talk to our husbands in a way we wouldn't speak to a stranger. We might on social media, but we wouldn't face to face. Like,
well, on a bad day, I might.
Yeah. Maybe, but
I'm kind of the same person at all times.
Yeah, but for the most part, yeah, I know how to bite my tongue.
Yeah, sure.
But because I feel safe with my husband,
yeah.
Sometimes my tongue runs away.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible is full of scripture mm-hmm. about the way we speak.
Yeah.
And she speaks to him with kindness.
Mm-hmm.
She is a person who is trustworthy. Thus, she also keeps the way he speaks to her
mm-hmm.
to herself. She's not running his business out at the gate. Where he's sitting.
That's why it says, his, you know, he's respected at the city gates, right?
Because she's not telling everything that's happening home.
Pastor Hackett used to give that instruction all the time. It's mm-hmm. like the pastor of the church we went to used to give that instruction all the time. Mm-hmm. He'd be like, ladies, listen, if you're having trouble at home, don't talk to your family mm-hmm. about it. Don't talk to your sister. Don't talk to your mama. Because you're going to figure it out. And mm-hmm. then after you figure it out, all they're going to be left with is a bad taste in their mouth about what a POS he was uh-huh. when he did X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never really thought about that.
Mm-hmm. But it says,
Deli says, you know,
it says in here two things. Mm-hmm. She opens her mouth with wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't always open my mouth with wisdom. I open it, but it ain't with wisdom. And then she speaks with kindness.
Yeah.
And what did you find in the scriptures you looked up, Ella, about speaking?
Ephesians 4:29 is a good one. Let no corrupt talk come out of your mouths, but only such that is good for building up, as fits mm-hmm. the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
It's
we
so hard.
We have to give grace. to our husbands. Lord, didn't you hear how he treated me? Didn't you see how he treated? You're supposed to give grace with our words.
Yeah.
I mean, that strikes to the heart of me as a wife and the ways that I failed my husband over the years. And we make a home. We set the tone of our home.
Right. We build it or destroy it.
And
with
sometimes
our words.
Yeah. We're tearing
just
it down.
Just with our energy.
Yeah. A husband can come home or a kid can come home and know immediately there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. There's something going on. And we're not always thinking that they get it, but they do, especially kids when they're younger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, they understand the tenor of the home. And then a lot of times when my home has been less than peaceful, it's because I've taken something a little too harshly or my husband didn't mean it that way. He had no idea that the way he said it was hurtful. And then instead of just being honest with him, I let it fester and sit and grow. And it becomes sort of a boiling undertone in our home. So, you know, I don't always speak with the expectation of giving grace, like she said there in Ephesians.
Yeah.
Did you have another one? Is that it?
There's a book that I read once called The Four Agreements. And it's like this guy, Don Miguel Ruiz. It's like if you can live your life by these four things, right? And like one of them is being impeccable with your word. Because again, you know, with a word, God created the world into being. And God put God's power in us. And with our words, we create the world. And so this guy, like one of the things he said is like, if you call something ugly, the fact of the matter is it is not ugly. There is nothing that is ugly. There is only your opinion. But when you call a thing ugly, like a person or a car or, you know, whatever, you make it so. And that may or may not even be true. And so be careful with like the power of your word because you create your reality with the things that you're saying, you know? And like, yeah, I mean, that's why I'm just praising the Lord for drugs.
I wish that instead of going through Song of Solomon when we got married as our sort of our marriage counseling, I wish we'd gone through some of this Proverbs 31 stuff from both a male and female side.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like you said it from the male and female side, because it's interesting to me that in Jewish culture, this is an ode that men, it's a song,
men
it's a poem of praise it's a poem of praise that men sing to their women. Because that's the other thing too. As much as we're sitting here talking about, you know, the power of a good tongue, of a woman's good tongue, because we are powerful and we are the source of life. Human, you know what I mean? Like the way that you are connected to your children, the ones that come out of your body, like neurons from your child will be in your brain for the rest of your life. Not their life, your life, right? It's in that we don't even begun to study the miracle, really, of what happens between a birthing body and the baby inside of it, right? Whether or not that child was kept, maybe the mom, whatever. That's why I'm trying to say mother, because moms come all kinds of ways to all kinds of babies. But there is a powerful connection there that we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of. And it's almost like that is the power that we carry when we speak to anyone or anything, because everybody came from a woman. Everybody came out of a woman. And so not just with our husbands, but like the power of our voices to reach back and touch that relationship, even to like the post office person, you know, because whether you like it or not, you walk around as a woman carrying the identity that gave birth to, you're going to remind someone of their mom, you know? And so even when we speak harshly.
I remember
harshly,
the first time I reminded somebody of their mom instead of their daughter. I was like, I'm so old.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm doing a study of the serpent and the seed.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the things that touched me this morning, actually, was it talked about after Eve and Adam had done the thing and the serpent, God had told them what was coming and the curse. Adam could have shamed her.
Mm.
He could have said, "Woman, what's wrong with you? I look at my dog and go, what did you do? What did you?" He didn't do that. It's the very next words after the curse are him saying to her, "Your name is Eve, the mother of all life."
Mm-hmm.
Like he could have shamed her, but instead he named her as his dominion.
Mm-hmm.
And he accepted her. He could have killed her. He could have done all kinds of things. But instead, like, those words were power, and it meant life.
In regard to this poem, another scholar that I read said, pointed out that the enmity is between a woman and her seed, not Adam's seed. It's so that's one of the reasons why this poem has this like valorous language, because it is now a woman's beautiful opportunity to fight for her seed in these home, like to be the warrior that fights that battle of the enmity between her and her seed, you know? And
how does she do it?
Well, these are the ways, right? Although I will say this, I don't like getting up before dawn.
I don't really either, but I like staying up late. So does that count?
I think it counts, right? Okay. You're awake when it's dark.
I do both.
She's awake when it's still dark. Yeah.
I never sleep. I just
never do it. There's like this word in Japanese that they talk about now that basically is like revenge scrolling, when like you are so tired you need to go to sleep, but you're vengefully scrolling just as an opportunity to find some like me time. But I will tell you, like, some of my most productive and best days where I would like was the most present for my kids and the most present for my husband and the most like calm and collected was when I got up at like 5:45, made my coffee, emptied the dishwasher, got breakfast and lunch prepped so that the rest of the day, mm-hmm. those tasks, yeah, Keisha, single parent.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, like.
Yeah, when you get up and do those things.
Yeah, and I have to, like, now, yeah. I mean, as part of my self-care and like what I do is like, I have to get up before.
Yeah.
It's hard to get up before before Kylea though, because she wakes up at like 4:30 every morning because she goes to bed at like 7:30, and I'm like,
wow.
Yeah,
I can't. Is she like really 80 years old?
I know. I think she is.
Does she go to the early bird specials?
I know, right? I think so. And I'm like, you're 16, and yeah. I never have to be like, get up, you're going to be late. Like, she's like up. But I have to make a point that I'm up super early before it's time for me to start getting ready for work, because yeah. I need that time to pray, to prepare yourself, to gird your loins
for the battle
yeah.
that you as a woman are yeah. going to be going out there facing and fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I don't, I can tell the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So where did you leave off with that, Sarita?
She's trustworthy. We talked about that, and she's good. But then it goes into what she does.
Yeah.
So she seeks, she goes to the market.
She comforts, encourages, and does him only good.
She gets up at the butt crack.
Yeah.
Okay. And Keisha, just so you don't feel alone, it also says she stays up really late.
Oh,
so,
okay.
This is you.
Midnight oil. Keisha doom scrolls as well.
Yeah. She's the Proverbs.
I don't even be scrolling. I should. I wish that was the issue.
So she goes to the market early in the morning to seek wool and flax because she's going to go make her own clothes, which I don't understand because I tried to sew a dress once and okay.
You know what? I go to the bear closet and I collect kids. I think that's the same thing. Like, I go out of my way to, like, find. See, because, like, she's selecting the wool and the flax. It's like she's carefully considering the threads that she's going to be sewing for her family, right? But
so
I do the same thing.
Her drip is going to be on point?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I do the same thing when I like prudently and carefully purchase. I don't buy willy-nilly, right? Like I examine the clothes. I'm like, look for the good quality. I try to make sure that when I'm getting things for my kids, and like I said, I go to the bear closet, the baby equipment, apparel, and resources room that every Methodist church has for families that need support. And so I get my kids' clothes from there. And I go and I say, hey,
I wish I knew that was a thing way back.
Yeah. The first one was started, I think, in Snow Creek Methodist Church here. But yeah, they've got them all over the place. You need a car seat. You need a crib. And they don't ask you for financials. They're not up in here trying to make you feel embarrassed or whatever. They're like, look, we just want to make sure that kids have what they need and that parents have what they need. Do you need some diapers? They'll give you diapers while you're there, right? It's great. It has saved our lives, you know, because again, like single income family and like a living wage in Asheville, Buncombe County now, living wage, which is where 30% of your income goes to your rent. That's how they calculate it. Buncombe County living wage is $22 an hour. Yeah, that's how expensive it is to live in Buncombe County.
With no real manufacturing resources. It's all hospitality yeah. industry.
And so
typically,
yeah,
there are some industries.
My husband just started making anything really above that in August of this last year. So this whole time we've been on Medicaid and on WIC, and we've been planting a garden. Our kids will go out there and like my daughter will pick a cucumber off the vine and eat it because we had to. right? And so that's part of that. So you know,
she would love that. She loves cucumbers.
Oh yeah. Well, there you go. Grow your own, girl. Grow your own. Yeah, your own tomatoes, your own cucumbers, a little red ripe tomatoes, what we call them. So we'll go out there and like take the fence off of the garden because we keep a fence on it so our dogs don't get at it. And me and my daughter will go out there with a basket and we look for the red ripe tomatoes and she'll pop them in her mouth, you know. So you know, to transpose that into modern times, she selects their wool and her flax. She's careful about the things she chooses to clothe her family in. And I promise you, every single person in this room is that same way. Mm-hmm. Maybe not you, Alex. You're not kids yet. Or married. But nope. I bet you can attest for that your mother did that for you.
But when she does buy her own clothes, mm-hmm. she's very selective about what yeah. she does buy.
And you make sure that the cost to value ratio is appropriate. Yeah.
Yes.
You don't buy
a little
you
bit
don't...
more on the staples.
Yes.
And a little bit less on the frivol.
That's right. Yeah.
And I mean, going back to verse 25, it talks about strength and dignity being her clothing. I know we're talking about physical clothing yeah. right now, but the definition of dignity is the state or quality of being worthy of respect or honor. Mm-hmm. If you're not dressing that way, like how are you going to get respect and honor from other people?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If you're not honoring your own body, other people won't.
Dress for the job you want, not the job you have, is what they used to say, you know?
Why am I not Wonder Woman? I dressed in Wonder Woman underoos when I was little.
Yeah, I guess I'm wearing nursing gear right now, so I guess I'm not doing anything good.
Your pants?
I surely did when I was little.
Okay, I was going to say
sometimes that was the key.
Are you not old enough to remember underoos?
Yeah, I am.
Okay,
yeah.
We wore those like playing in the neighborhood. So,
yeah, I was going to say Princess you got to wear them on the outside.
Woman, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that, has a good one.
Then it talks about grocery shopping.
Yeah.
She's like a merchant ship that brings her food from afar. I go to
Trader Joe's.
Or Publix or
yeah.
Lidl is my favorite place.
Yeah.
And all their food's from like Germany. So it's like bringing it from afar.
Yeah. I drink coffee.
Yeah. But I'm not going to like
that did not grow in North Carolina. Uh-uh. No, ma'am.
I'm not going to Columbia. But that
was.
To
but the thing
food.
Is, like, this was effort, right?
Yeah.
So if this didn't something that came from your home, you had to go somewhere.
It wasn't from her garden.
Right? Yeah, mm-hmm. You had to go to a market, which means you had to like pack your
and
bags
it was every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I personally feel like I go to get my food from afar literally every day. Because I have to like I have to get my kids. I got to put them in the car. I got to get my list for the week. I got to go to the grocery store. I got to pick which grocery store because sometimes it's the Food Line and sometimes it's Ingles mm-hmm. and sometimes it's the Aldi. Mm-hmm. I got to discern which place is going to have the thing that I need to work within the budget we've got as a family. So like that's really, I mean, because you know she couldn't just do, you know, it's work to go procure the food from afar, both now and then.
And then she meal preps in verse 15.
Mm-hmm.
She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her house. So she meal preps. She's got, like you said, the best days are when you do breakfast and lunch already pre-made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or when you have lunches made for school the mm-hmm. night before.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, my best weeks are when I meal plan for the week.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
are we having each night for dinner? Now we're in the stage of, okay, first I need to know who's going to be home. What not? You're not there. But it used to be I was cooking for six people.
Yeah.
Well, all of a sudden.
Yeah.
We're just not home at night anymore.
It might be two people. I've cooked for six.
Yeah.
And then I'm throwing leftovers away. And do you know
what?
How?
What? Give it to me.
That was my biggest adjustment.
Do you know how it kills me?
Pack it up and ship
food?
It to me, Sarita.
Listen, I have filled my freezer full. Like, I cannot.
I know. It drives me nuts. We have a compost. The only thing that saves us is that we compost so that we can put it back into our garden and grow our own food. And literally two-thirds of our garden last year was volunteers. That just came from our compost. So we got to, like, eat our own food again, which was great. But yeah. Yeah.
It's been an adjustment. You said it was a hard adjustment.
Yeah, it was
for
a hard adjustment. Yeah, cuz I mean, I was married before and then I had my two daughters and you know, so like three people are gone, you know. And I still have my youngest and I'm like, "Oh, I have to cook for two." And then I was wasting so much food because it was like, I'm not used to this. I don't know how to go to the store and shop for two people.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Or prepare meals or cook for two
everything
people.
Everything comes in a big pot.
Yeah, like
I don't know how to make everything in a small pot.
Yeah, so that was a hard adjustment.
I'm used to the
family
size.
And I get with my mother-in-law, I'll say, what did you have for dinner tonight? And she'll be like, we ate cereal. I'm like, I totally get that. Like, I get that because you can pour how much ever you want in the bowl.
Yeah.
And then put your own milk. Like, I totally get that. Meanwhile, I've made like a giant pot of chili. Well, that's not one thing that gets left over. No, they don't. Like, yeah, I make a giant. Yeah, no, unfortunately, chili doesn't get left over in my house. I don't know why.
Because chili's good.
Chili is good. Delightful. But all that to say is it's been a big adjustment to the budget and everything because I'm like, well, I shouldn't be buying as many groceries because everybody's not home, but they're still eating. They're just not always eating when I'm eating, so.
Before I had the kids and I was still single, like there were like I would eat broccoli and popcorn for dinner, you know. And I remember talking to my mom when it was because it was just me for a long time. I remember I would talk to my mom and even to this day, because my mom had nine kids all total, eight at home at one time, and then you know different ones came in and out. But for the bulk of my childhood, there was seven or eight of us at home, and my grandma. So there was a lot. My mom would start cooking at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Because she had like an army. She was feeding an army every night, you know, and there was never leftovers because there was an army of people eating this food. And so even now to this day, I'll be like, hey, mom, how's it going? And we're just going to, you know, shoot the breeze and chit chat and catch up. And the first words out of her mouth are she start telling me about what her menu items are for the week. Because it was so ingrained in her brain, you know, after all those years of the meal planning, that even now that she's like only her and her husband, she's still, I'm like, so mom, how's it going? She's like, oh, I'm making this for dinner. I watched the interview with Aretha Franklin. And it was like the end of the interview. And it was like a Barbara Walters or something, you know. And the interviewer was like, so, you know, at this point in your life, tell me what is the hardest thing about being you now? And she looked that person dead in the eye and said, trying to plan dinner every night. Like every single night, I got to come up with something to eat. And that is 100% true. But back to this thing that we were talking about earlier with our tongues and the power of our energy and the power of like how we create the home. This instruction isn't just like for this is what you should do to be a good woman. It's honey. You are going to feel a lot better. It's going to be easier for you if you do this. Yeah. It's going to be a lot easier for me to have a kind tongue and to be like patient. If like I'm not, if Dylan doesn't walk in the door at 5 o'clock and I'm harried and scattered and like trying to figure out what we're going to have for dinner, you know, it's actually an instruction for how I can live my life with the most peace in my soul and my heart. When I've got meal planned for the week and gone to the grocery shopping on Sunday, when Dylan can be home with the kids and I don't have to say no to every lollipop and balloon at the grocery store, like when I come home and I've got it all sorted out and I've got it all prepped, I'm a happier, calmer, more collected person. So it's not even just again, back to the original point and the original tone of this poem was not so women could talk about all the different ways that they're failing, or not so men could make sure women knew all the different ways they were failing, or how they were going to be worthy enough for them. It was like celebrating the power of a woman, the valor of a woman, but also giving us instruction on how we can walk in our power in a way that benefits us and everyone around us, you know? But yeah. She profits. What is the next one? And again, that's another thing.
And she also provides for her maidservant. So I don't have any of that.
I need some. Yeah. I've been asking the Lord, where are my maidservants at?
But if you have like
ridiculous,
if you have a cleaning lady that comes to your house, do you have to feed her?
According to scripture, you should.
Now I do take food to. I have a couple of ladies in my neighborhood who are widows, recent widows, so I do take food to them from time to time. But most of us don't have. We're not. Prepping food for the maidservant.
But this is another interesting thing, and I don't really have a whole lot of commentary on it, but it is interesting that it's like, she's like the merchant ships abounding with treasure. She brings her household's food from afar. She also rises while it's still night and gives food to her household and assigns tasks to her maids. Highly unusual that it would be her house. That's an unusual turn of phrase, which I find fascinating. And so, you know, for all of those mothers out there that are doing it on your own, maybe that's some encouragement for you too. Or for all those women whose husbands died and they had to like take it over.
Or who are there but not there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there are plenty of dads who are there, but they're not there.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's fascinating. Yeah, as I was looking down too, like I was like, ooh, yeah, because you were like,
I was like, crap, I didn't realize it was 8:15.
Yeah. My kids go to bed at 8:30, so the longer I'm here, the less I have to go home and do it. I'm making jokes. I'm making jokes. I love my children. I do. But they, if I'm home, they want mama. They want mama only, mm-hmm. you know? And it actually, Dylan likes for me to leave because he wants them to want him. So he's like, good.
When I waited tables every night, mm-hmm. they wanted dad.
Yeah. It's been really helpful for me to go out, and he wants me to go do things in the evening like this because it gives him
but
that
having
space.
That time with their father is huge.
It's huge. It's important.
And she and her dad are so close, and I love it.
I think the youngest is Jubilee. She's got her dad's middle name too. So, but yeah. So that's an interesting turn of phrase. That she's bringing it for her household. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She rises while it's still night, gives food to her household. You know, she considers a
and
field
she
before
buys,
she buys she, or accepts it.
She becomes a real estate agent. That's me.
Oh, Sarita. Mm-hmm. That's the path the Lord got you on.
Well, she goes and looks. Is that field going to produce?
Yeah.
Is that house going to produce a rental? You know, is it good? So, and then she buys it.
Yeah.
She buys it. She didn't go to her husband and say, I want to buy this plant. I want you to buy this. She considers it with her profits.
Right. So she's an industrious business owner as well, not just somebody who she has her
maker.
Own money.
She a winemaker girl.
She is. You know, her arms are strong. She sees that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out, but it burns continually through the night.
But you skipped right over. She strengthens her arms.
I did. Mm. Yeah, she lifts weights.
She lifts weights. So we have to be perfectly fit with a perfect mouth, hard worker. Dude, no wonder women feel less than.
I did skip over that one because I'm like, but I mean, you know, but,
as a
but
teacher,
I understand
I
what she's saying.
Arms.
She strengthens her arms because the arms are the ones that do the task. So it's metaphorical strengthening. Although I do have guns now that I'm toting around. Two children.
Well,
Jubilee's 19 pounds and Aurora's 30.
But it says she willingly works with her hands. And if you mm-hmm. work with your hands, you're going to have
big old arms.
Yeah.
Tone.
They were not sedentary back in these days.
No, they didn't have the option.
They weren't revenge scrolling or whatever you said.
Yeah. revenge. I can't remember the Japanese word for it. But yeah, she stretches out her hand to the distaff.
What is a distaff?
Let me look.
Anybody got a dictionary?
The staff that holds the textile fibers for spinning. So it's spinning. Like a spinning wool.
So she's making out.
Yeah, she's making her. Yeah, and her hands hold the spindle. So spinning her own. She opens and extends her hand to the poor, which, you know.
But she doesn't make just any cloth.
She makes scarlet
and fine linen and purple, which mm-hmm. was for royalty.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So and she sold that probably and made a pretty penny off of mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. So again, we're talking about
a
woman who.
She had a really cool craft room.
This is, I cannot describe how, everything that I read about this is so unbelievably unusual in ancient Near East writings. This woman was a business owner. She had her own money. She bought things without consulting her husband, partially because he had that level of faith and trust in her.
Mm-hmm. Partially because he was sitting at the gate yakking it up with the men folks.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But because he understood her value and her created purpose.
He let her run.
Which
the
was
house.
Not.
He let
yes. Her do it. Because she wasn't supposed to be subordinate. She was a competent and capable character who was designed to do these things with wisdom and aplomb.
Okay, so I want to go back in time, not as far back as her, but it may be a time that might cause a little bit of uncomfortability, and I'm going to say I don't mean it in any term. In the pre-Civil War South, different time period, different, but certain Southern women, white women, were trained to be household executives for their homes. They trained their daughters that way. If you go and read, not watch the movie, Gone with the Wind, Scarlet, those are the two novels written by her. They were trained to run a home. I was not trained to run a home. I didn't know the first thing about like a household budget. I didn't know anything about that. I didn't know.
It's a thing you do for your children when you're wealthy, more so.
Probably. We were just getting by eating pinto beans and rice. There was no really running around. But you know what I mean? Like,
well, and then also.
I didn't know that there should be a cleaning schedule.
Well,
because my mom did all the cleaning partly because we never did it right.
Right.
That's what she told us. But partly that she just grew up doing it.
Yeah.
And I met my mother-in-law and she's like, yeah, I do a little bit of laundry every day so it doesn't get away from me. I was like, you do? You're not doing four baskets a week? Like at one time? Like, yeah. wondered, yeah. Like, I didn't understand that they're, it's almost like an executive position.
Well, and we can go back even further. Because there are other cultures, and even like, you know, even in Greek culture, women were raised to run their households. Because whenever you're talking about a culture where things, again, weren't easily procured, your home was not just an unit of consumption, it was a unit of production. Because you had to produce the wool, you had to produce the food, you had probably to produce had the bread. You probably had to, right? So there was, it also goes, so I do think there's a, like Andy is saying, there's an element of wealth involved in the pre-Civil War South, and an element of, has a lot of, it does have some connotations that aren't the best. So let's find another example.
Well, Little Women.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody read Little Women?
Exactly, yes.
Those women
yes.
were taught, Old yeah. Wuthering Heights, Pride and Prejudice, Emma, and all of yeah. this is again, an ancient civilization to me.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not wearing a corset and,
yeah.
you know, waiting
but
for learning Mr. Darcy
how
to
speak,
but learning how to run a home.
Run a home in a way that, that shows that you're capable. And again, like when I was doing my study on the way that Greece ran their world and stuff, women were in charge of the home, the oikos, and men were in charge of the polis. And women did have all of this, like that was their realm, and men didn't interfere. And there's so many of these different scholars that have talked about in ancient Greece, some value to a woman that can do all of these things or whatever. But because I think they inherently had like a distaste for women rooted in like a lot of different stuff that I think is just like not even going to bring it into the environment. They're gross. But again, you know, when you're talking about a period of time where procurement of things like a dress or like
wasn't
food,
just down at
wasn't
the Walmart.
Just down the Walmart. It had to be produced in your
or the
family.
Dollar General.
And when you're living in these times and cultures where men had the ability to go out and work and women didn't, women had to be more responsible in a way that we have not necessarily been handing down because it became easier for us to procure things. But the Proverbs 31 woman is part of that period of time.
She knew how to manage the house. She knew.
Yeah.
She was instructed by her mother. She was...
Yeah.
Somebody taught
well,
her.
Well, yeah, someone taught her how to do it. And then she's passing it down, you know, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She gives counsel and instruction. She looks well to how things go in her household. You know, her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, when he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly and well with the strength of character that is steadfast in goodness, but you excel them all. So she does have, there is that teaching component that she passes this down to her children, how to behave and how to continue running the household. Because it's not just doing the work. It's reproducing herself and her strength in her children, which is also, again, something that we have not been given as women our due in how much we do that and pass it down to our sons and our daughters and how to do these things and how to care for these, how to care for yourself and how to run your home, mm-hmm. you know? Because I'll tell you something, boys need to learn how to sweep too.
Mm-hmm. Listen to me. When my kids were little, I got one of the front-loading washers so that they didn't have the excuse that they couldn't reach into the washing machine because yeah. they learned really young how to do their laundry.
Yeah. Yeah.
They had, I mean.
You had to. I was doing my own laundry when I was 6 years old. We had 9 kids and we were definitely on a schedule. At my house, my mom had us divided into teams, team A and team B.
Oh, this is fun.
And on team A, you had kitchen duties and team B, you had kids duties. So my mom would say, who's on dishes this week? And you knew if that was your job. And then she had us divided into pairs so that you had 2 pairs of kids on kids and 2 pairs of kids on dishes.
Your
and
mom so, was this lady right here.
Yeah, well, yeah. And she had to be because she had an army. She was running an army. And so if it was, she would say, who's on dishes? And you knew who was on dishes. And she would say, okay, someone needs to set the table. Someone needs to peel the potatoes. And you would just hop too. It was also our job to clean the kitchen if you were on kitchen. And kitchen was also divided into 2 A and B. And those parts switched. If you were A Monday, then you were B Tuesday. Hmm. And that was, and A was help with dinner prep. And B was like, A had to wash the dishes. B had to wash the pots and pans. A had to sweep the floor. B had to mop the floor every night. It was, our house was run like absolutely Navy ship. But that is just because it had to be.
Yeah,
and
function.
So when you have, when you don't have a choice, like when you have these tasks that
when
are before you,
you're the single mom that has to do almost everything.
You have to do it. And gentlemen, if you have a, if you are of the male persuasion and you are listening at this juncture and you have a female at home that is doing this work for you, the command of the Lord is to praise her and to give her praise. Give her the product of her hand. Let her own works praise her in the gates of the city. You know? That's it. Her husband also, and he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly and well. Charm and grace are deceptive and superficial. Beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord shall be praised. Give her the product of her hand and let her own works praise her in the city gate. You know? Mm-hmm. It's not a measuring stick by which we need to be held accountable. It's an opportunity for the worth and the value and the strength of women to be honored, acknowledged, and recognized, and for the men in their lives to praise them for that work. Because she's a woman of valor. And this poem, this acrostic poem, is more in line with the Hebraic hero tradition and hero poetry, which I thought was also pretty spectacular. Women are not to be subordinate. Mm-hmm. They are powerful, important creatures that have unique gifts. And when they are given their proper due, you know, it's a good partnership.
Mm-hmm. It's the way God meant it to be.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming in, y'all. That was a good study. That concludes our two-part study on the Proverbs 31. We hope you guys enjoyed it. Feel free to shoot us an email letting us know, especially if you didn't like it, because we love to hear that. That's our favorite.
Is that andy@burrowsofberea.com?
Yeah. Yeah. If you like this, you know, also shoot us.
You should
us
definitely
a,
send all your complaints to andy@burrowsofberea.com.
Yeah, yeah. And not to me at all. Yeah. And, you know, continue to listen to our content, share, like, invite, and subscribe. All right, folks. Thanks again. And we'll see you next time on Notes from the Underground.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Hey guys, this is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. Do you know how much blood, sweat, and tears it takes to make a podcast? None. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't cost a lot. And so if you guys don't mind, if anybody would like to give to help us with these episodes, it would be great. We'll put out even more content. And if you go to our Patreon page, just search for the Burrows of Berea, you'll get extra notes, extra episodes, and it's pretty much free. A dollar gets you a lot. Thanks, guys.